Hey, Elmo.
Hey, what's going on, Ben? How are you?
Good, good, good. Just got into Buffalo.
Nice, nice. So Kevin Pillar just got traded.
I know.
And the podcast is done.
I think what we do is we get back to it next week. Right now, I'm here. Arden's getting ready to go to Cleveland, so we're not realistically going to be able to talk about it now. So we'll talk about it next week and just release what we have for now.
All right, sounds good. Enjoy Buffalo, man.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, see you.
1-1 to Rowdy. Swung on, hit in the air. Deep center field. Back goes Montauk. He's at the wall. He jumps. It's gone!
I just hit it in the air, and I knew that I got my job done. I got, you know, at least one run in, and hopefully I was getting two, but I ended up getting three.
Rowdy Tellez has tied this game with a pinch hit. Three-run homer in the bottom of the eighth. 3-3. Blue Jays and Tigers.
Wilner's excited. I'm not. And I'll tell you why, Ben. So Rowdy Tellez hits that home run. That's great. The only reason Rowdy Tellez is in the lineup as a designated hitter is because Kendrys Morales is no longer here. You know why Kendrys Morales is no longer here? Because he got traded off the 25-man roster about 45 minutes before first pitch of the season. And perhaps you remember a certain over-under pitched by one shy Davidi.
The Blue Jays traded a total of 8 players off the big league roster ahead of the non-waiver and waiver trade deadlines last year. This season, I'm wondering how many players you think they're going to trade off the 25-man roster before the single trade deadline hits on July 31st. I'm eager to see what you guys come up with.
And perhaps you remember a certain stipulation that I think was added without cause. In the over-under process. I'm getting jobbed here, man.
So the stipulation that you're talking about here was that for a trade to count in the over-under, it had to occur after first pitch. And the Morales trade happened before first pitch, so obviously it doesn't count.
Yeah, the stipulation's clear.
Yeah.
I don't like it one bit.
Well, you didn't have a problem with it last week.
No, I didn't. I have a real problem with it now.
Right.
I've already lost Dwight Smith Jr. And right. The only like reason that even came up was because I asked you, does Dwight Smith Jr. count? And you were like, no, first pitch.
Exactly.
And I didn't realize the little jujitsu that you were playing there.
I had no idea they were going to trade Morales. And this is the way it played out. So it doesn't count on the over-under tally.
No, neither did I. I didn't know they were going to trade Morales either. I didn't think they would find somebody to trade from. I don't think the Blue Jays thought they'd find somebody to trade from my understanding. Like, this came up very late.
Yeah.
And they were like, we'll do that. I feel like I need a concession somewhere else. I'm operating at a disadvantage here, man. I don't like it. I want to litigate this.
It also impacts the Teoscar over under in left field. Hazel's question, the number of putouts that he would get as a left fielder, because now the DH is open, Teoscar could see some more time as that designated hitter. It creates a lot of moving pieces. Even the home run over under, Morales is probably one of their better home run bats, so now he's gone. You don't have quite as much certainty on that front, so the trade really shaped a few of those over unders.
Could affect the defensive efficiency if you've got Teoscar Hernandez in left, or less often in left, if you're not having Kendrys Morales at first base, even though it would have only been for a handful of games. There's a lot of fallout from this, but the one I'm primarily concerned about is the trade, because I took the over.
Well, like I said, you had the chance to object last week, and it seemed fair then.
Let's bring it down. Let's bring it down to 6.5.
I think we're leaving it exactly where it is. Our listeners have already filled out their over-under sheets. We can't change the rules up now. They're in stone, essentially, at this point.
I will say, one of my favorite moments on opening day, and opening day is like, it's a bit of a slog for us because like there's just so much going on and there's too many people around. Like, I love a nice game like yesterday or Sundays when, you know, it's just like you can go down early and to the clubhouse and there's not a ton of people hanging out and like you can just do your job. So opening day is like not my favorite day of the season, but I did enjoy the conversation we had with a member of the Blue Jays front office in which we actually ran an over-under by them. It was one that, you know, it didn't exactly reflect well on the success of the team.
No.
And they were trying to kind of make an argument for why we were wrong. And then in the end was just kind of like, you're probably right.
Right. This is a team defense question and posed by Dan Shulman. Arden and I had both said that essentially, unlikely this team would take a huge step forward defensively. And hey, the Blue Jays, of course, internally are a little more optimistic than we are. They like the players that they've assembled and believe that this team can take steps forward, but we'll see if they can actually do it in the course of 162.
I just like the concession at the end of the, I mean, I understand why you guys chose that. Yeah. I understand why you guys went under. So Kendrys Morales is gone, man. He was traded to the Oakland Athletics with cash for a prospect and international pool money. A surprise, as we indicated. We've been talking about this for 2 years, basically, that the Blue Jays haven't had their DH spot, and they would it would be a lot easier for them to configure their lineup, and they would be a lot more versatile and just a lot more modern without carrying this DH-only guy who can maybe like go like have a glove on his hand over it first every once in a while. But like, it really does open things up now going forward for the Blue Jays to rotate players through DH. Like, they could have really used it the last couple of years when they had a bunch of like old guys who were hurt all the time, when you had like Russell Martin, Josh Donaldson, and you know, like even going back to Jose Bautista. But you know, now the Blue Jays just look like a much better configured roster.
Yeah, they do. And you can even see in the first few games without Kendrys Morales around, they've had Rowdy Tellez in the major leagues. You heard Wilner's call off the top. He's here, he's contributing. And otherwise, Tellez would have been in the minor leagues, but it's not just about Tellez, because we saw Randall Grichuk in that spot in the second game of the season. And then even on Sunday, they had Danny Jansen in the DH spot. And I really like the move of having Jansen lead off as the DH. I don't think as a catcher you necessarily want that guy leading off, just because at home you go right from catching, get the gear off, get on deck. I mean, that's like a lot. I don't think that's ideal. But if he's DHing, no problem. Great on-base bat. I like him in that spot. So we've already seen the Blue Jays use this in different ways. And I think as the season goes on, we're going to see them cycle even more players through that one spot.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some of the decisions Charlie Montoyo's been making later on in the podcast, and some of our thoughts on the way that he's been managing so far. This is obviously At the Letters, brought to you by the all-new 2019 Ford Ranger. How do we reflect on the Kendrys Morales tenure as it was? You know, I feel like at the time of the signing, we said, that's curious, you know, don't know about this one. It could work out if, you know, the exit velo comes through and he ends up hitting a bunch of home runs. Like, yeah, okay, maybe he could be like a cheaper Edwin who's just as effective. But I feel like we've been saying for a while now, it was a bad contract. Blue Jays shouldn't have signed it. Their timing couldn't have been worse, in that the market for guys like that absolutely cratered about 45 minutes after the ink dried on the contract. It was a bad move by this front office.
No doubt. It was a bad move. And you're right that it was right after that Morales deal that the market for those bat-only DHs just disappeared. And really, his $33 million contract might be the last big contract, the Billy Butler-type contract, Kendrys Morales contract. It's kind of the last of its kind, which tells you, well, teams are moving away from that for a reason. It's not just one team. It's all 30 teams moving away from this kind of contract. So yeah, it was a bad deal. And I think at the time, I was probably too forgiving to it. I think I was like, yeah, you know, it kind of makes sense. He's a good bat. And at $11 million a year, you only need him to be a one-win player. So, you know, you're fine. Yeah. But I think in hindsight, I wasn't taking into account the market for those bats and how affordable they are. And then the opportunity cost of filling up your DH spot and essentially locking it in, as opposed to having the flexibility that we're seeing right now. So clearly, bad deal, didn't work out. And that's the deal part of it. There's another side to it, of course, which is Kendrys Morales, the person. And that's something that we've heard a lot about from his Blue Jays teammates before the deal and certainly after the deal.
And I'm just as guilty of it as well, because, you know, every offseason I'd look at the numbers and be like, man, like, this guy barrels the hell out of the ball. Great exit velocity numbers. You look at his expected stats versus his actual stats, and it's like, maybe, I guess he's been kind of having bad luck. Like, why are his expected stats so much higher than the actual stats that he's putting up? I'm just kind of coming around on the fact that, you know, the pluses of that exit velocity are just kind of diminished by the fact that the guy can't run. Yeah. You know, and by the fact that you can hit it as hard as you want, but if he hits it on the ground, it's an out. He can't run. You know, a lot of time he hits it so hard that it goes off the wall and he's stuck at first because he can't get to second fast enough. You know, like, it's the type of profile where you're going to get, the results are going to be what they are. They probably aren't going to match what the expected results are based on the quality of contact that he makes. You got to, hitting the ball is only one part of it. You got to be able to run afterwards. And you look at even the clubhouse stuff, Kendrys Morales is fantastic in the clubhouse, right? Like, tremendous guy in the clubhouse, great effect on young Latin players, like, never a problem for you at all. But I think that, you know, the fact that the Blue Jays, as soon as they had, you know, something on the table for him, the fact that they moved as quickly as they did kind of demonstrates that, you know, that stuff only carries so much weight.
Right. And we've seen that too with the Bud Norris signing. I mean, they're clearly more concerned about performance than they are about the idea of leadership or clubhouse impact. Performance carries the day. And that's not just the Blue Jays. That's all over Major League Baseball. The Astros traded for Roberto Osuna. So they're, you know, it's really not about who you are. It's about what you can do on the field for Major League teams. And Morales, you know, from everything that we see, you think about the kind of professionalism that he brought, just being someone who would show up so early, so consistently in spring training. He'd always be taking those long road trips, bus trips down to Port Charlotte, when most veterans would be like, yeah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And so you see the commitment to baseball from Morales, and it was really legitimate. And I think that it had a positive influence on the Blue Jays. But at a certain point, it becomes about creating opportunity for other young players.
Yeah, and at a certain point, it comes about rostering guys who can actually do stuff for you on the field. You know, like the Blue Jays could, you know, they could have, and they did, sing Kendrys Morales' praises like all spring. But I mean, he was around for his leadership, sure, but it was more so because he was a relatively unmovable asset. And the Blue Jays wanted to see if maybe down the line we will be able to get something for him, and they did with the pool money. And you're right, it's true, like what they say about Kendrys Morales. Like, he really is that. Like, I always remember, you'll relate to this, like when we do our pregame TV hits, right? And there's the Rogers Center on the road, like you go down and you'd usually do them at like 6:35-ish for the pregame show with Thrasher Hazel. And you go and you just got to hang out somewhere. So you end up sitting in the dugout because we do them right beside the dugout. Every time, 6:35 p.m., Kendrys Morales was there in the dugout, fully kitted out, full uniform. He's got his bats, he's got his helmets, his gloves, and he is just ready to play like more than half an hour before the game even begins on teams where if you had, you know, four or five guys out by the national anthems, like that's even that's generous. The Blue Jays, not a team that was generally out there super early. Kendrys Morales always come over and say hi, and he was prepared and he was getting ready and he was stretching. I mean, and that was just his routine. And that's the type of thing that I think you want young players to be around and to see that, like, yeah, this is how you're supposed to do it. You know, that's what they, like, Vlad Guerrero Sr. had, you know, apparently told Vlad Jr., like, look, just follow around Kendrys Morales and do things exactly the way that guy does them because he does it the right way.
Yeah, and Vlad Jr. definitely took that in. He had an Instagram post where he was singing the praises of Kendrys Morales and, you know, understandably so because he is that professional. And I think, too, it's easy to forget because his production was pretty lacking, but this is a guy who had really good bat-to-ball skills. I mean, switch hitter. As a hitter, he was impressive. He went on that home run streak. Even just around the batting cage, you'd see him bouncing baseballs on the bat like endlessly. Yeah. That's a really hard thing to do unless you're insanely coordinated, but that's what he was. He was really slow, but he was also just a really, really coordinated person who could put the bat to the ball, hit for a relatively high average considering how slow he was. And ultimately, for the Jays, they just didn't need that, but it's not hard to imagine that he might contribute offensively, at least for the A's.
I think the big thing in the return for the Blue Jays is the international bonus pool money. Club now has a little more than $1.5 million, which, and this is an interesting distinction, is for this period that we're in right now. So they got to spend that before July, and they have been acquiring bonus pool money. So they clearly have their eye on someone. I don't know who that is, but you would think it wouldn't be like a guy from the Dominican Republic or a place like that, because those guys generally are all committed at this point. Like, it would have to be someone from a different market. I don't know who it is. We're going to find out before July, but the Blue Jays have, you know, $1.5 million. So they're going to spend on someone to acquire some sort of young talent.
That's definitely enough to get a pretty high end talent too. Yeah. So we'll see who they end up landing. Probably some 16-year-old that we've never heard of, but that's where you get sometimes.
Could be older. Right?
It could be.
Could be a guy from Cuba, you know, who's defected or something like that, right? Could be from the Pacific Rim.
That's where you find that Latin talent, is by getting the money for this kind of signing and then directing it toward those top prospects.
The highest paid player in the Toronto Blue Jays right now, do you know who that is off the top of your head?
Smoke's at 8. I'm trying to think if anyone's higher than him.
You've already got it.
Smoke?
Justin Smoke.
Wow.
$8 million.
Wow.
Can you believe it? With Kendrys gone. And look, the Blue Jays are paying Kendrys and they are paying Troy Tulowitzki and they are paying Russell Martin, the highest paid in uniform player on the Toronto Blue Jays, Justin Smoke at $8 million, which to me is like somewhat jarring when you consider all the years that we've seen, you know, Josh Donaldson at 23 and, you know, 20 before that, and Tulo and Martin in the 20s and Bautista up there, Edwin, Marco Estrada was like 13, 14.
David Price.
When you see some of the salaries that the Blue Jays have carried to now just see, like, go to Cots and look at the breakdown. There's not a lot of high-paid guys on this team.
It's Rays-esque. Did you see, speaking of high-paid Blue Jays, did you see Russell Martin pitch on the weekend?
I sure did.
Come on, Russell, get it done. He's on the mound. Pop fly, center field. Russell Martin with a 1-2-3 ninth inning. All smiles for the Dodgers tonight.
That was pretty fun.
That was fantastic.
That was awesome. Up to 84.
Two ground balls and a pop-up.
Love how afterwards his instinct is to walk towards second base because that was what he would do as a catcher. Yeah. So he completely ghosts his catcher who's back there looking for the handshake. And the infielder had to remind Russell Martin to turn around and give his catcher a handshake.
Somehow we got through 4 years of Russell Martin, watch him play shortstop, but he's out there at third base and we didn't see him pitch.
Yeah. Shortstop, right? Russell Martin. Yeah, it is kind of weird in retrospect because he played everywhere when he was here.
The other thing I want to point out about the Blue Jays salaries next year, this team has only $18 million committed.
Man.
That's it. $18 million. And 14 of that is Troy Tulowitzki.
And the other is what, Lourdes?
Lourdes is in there at $3 million next year. You got a $1 million buyout for Freddie Galvis, or you could bring him back.
Man.
Isn't that like, I don't know, this is, it might just be hitting me more than other people, but like, it has been a serious turn in terms of payroll with this club.
Right. And the additions they've made are mostly short term. So on paper, that's great. You have flexibility. The flexibility is obviously only as good as the acquisitions you use it for, because there's, you know, your team doesn't become better just by having this contractual freedom. But if they can use that, make some really smart signings and add some good players, then they'll be much better off.
Yeah, maybe you should sign Bryce Harper.
Yeah,
maybe you could fit in $30 million salary on this payroll.
Two homers already for the Phillies.
Not just homers, like rockets.
It's crushing them. It's like, awesome.
Hitting balls to the moon. I was watching Sunday night. I was watching last night when he just crushed a pitch.
It's amazing.
"18 years as a manager in the minor leagues, and now Charlie Montoyo is leading the Toronto Blue Jays.
It was pretty cool. Like, I'm enjoying every minute of it. And how about a nail biter for my first one, you know? It was fine."
Blue Jays one strike away from their first win of the regular season. Two out, nobody on. Guerra set, and he deals. Swing and a miss to finish the ball game.
Oh, man, it was great, man. Charlie comes in, first big league win. We threw him in the shower, gave him a little nice cold shower, so it was great. Oh, he needed a cold one, yeah. He got about maybe 50, 60 cold ones all at the same time, so it was awesome.
That makes it more special, how happy they were for me for my first win in the big league. So, yeah, everybody's saying congratulations, and the first of many and stuff like that. It was pretty cool.
Arrhenius shows bunt again. This time gets it down nicely on the first baseline. Norris picks it up, throws to first in time. But a successful sacrifice executed by Richard Urania moves Galvis to third with one out for the top of the order.
It depends where we are in the lineup. You don't see that very often. Guys just don't hit them over anymore. So I'll take the bat away from Richie, get him over. And Richie's a good bunter too. So, you know, and he did the job.
And there's good news from the Blue Jays bench. Freddie Galvis emerges on deck to pinch hit.
It was like 20 minutes maybe before game time when he said he couldn't go because, of course, he's got a streak going. So I said, well, get loose. If you can get loose, I'll give you time, you know. And then he said, no, I just won't be able to go. And for Freddie to say that, that means he couldn't go. And then around the third inning, Nicky, our trainer, says, okay, he got loose pretty good and he feels good. So he should be able to pinch hit or play. So, yeah, around the third inning, that's when we found out he could play.
So here's what we're getting from Charlie Montoyo is some pretty full explanations of the moves that he's been making. And I would say that in this first four-game series with which he's managed, I don't want to say we've learned a ton about him, but we have seen some like really interesting things that he's going to do differently than John Gibbons did them.
Yeah, I wrote about this a little bit on Saturday after the Blue Jays shut the Tigers out, and that was the Aaron Sanchez start. We ended up seeing, I guess, a few different hints at how he'll manage. And it's like you're saying, I don't want to read too much into it because here we are on April 1st.
It's kind of what we do.
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah. So we're gonna work with what we have.
It's been April for about 10 hours.
Yeah, four games in and we're drawing conclusions, or at least like guiding the discussion a little bit as far as what we would expect from Montoyo. And I think that what we saw with Sanchez was he kept him in the sixth inning against Miguel Cabrera. He said, I want to get one more out from you. This is their toughest hitter. Sanchez was looking pretty good that day, up to 97, dropping in that curveball that had a lot of movement on it.
I think he thought he was done when he came out, too.
I thought so, too.
I wanted to ask him. I didn't get the chance to. But like the way he came off the mound, like it looked like he thought he was done.
Because he had struck out the final batter of the fifth inning, Castellanos. Yeah. And it just seemed 88 pitches. It seemed like he was done. But Montoyo said, hey, can I get one more from you? And that's an example to me of him trusting his eyes as opposed to the stat sheet. Because if you were going by the numbers, best hitter in the order, and you're going third time through, you probably go to a reliever at that point. But Montoyo decided he liked what he had seen from Sanchez, and he went with him. Sanchez ends up hitting Cabrera out of the game for both of them, actually. And then the Blue Jays get out of it with Tim Mesa. But I think that was one interesting example of how he's managed.
Yeah. And we've also seen the opposite of that, where it's not just what he's seeing, but it's what the numbers are telling him.
Right.
And that's in, I would say, some of his batting order configurations. You see Danny Jansen up there in the leadoff spot. You see, you know, it's kind of flipping around, you know, your 3-4 hitters and moving guys around a little bit. A lot of that movement has come from the Blue Jays analytics and has come from them looking at, you know, not just like righties versus lefties and stuff, but looking at, all right, what's this pitcher's spin rate? And how does this hitter's bat path line up with that spin rate? And we've been using Rapsodo all spring and using Rapsodo during batting practice to determine like how guys swing. And then you just kind of try to match up like who is the, you know, because you know, Danny Jansen hasn't faced a lot of major league pitchers. You can't go on his history against guys, and you really wouldn't want to, even if you had like a 10 plate appearance sample. Like it's not enough. It doesn't really tell you that much, the results. But if you can match up, you know, some bat path and some plane to the tunnels that a pitcher likes to use, or the spin rate that he has, that's an advantage that you can try to use.
Yeah, and batter pitcher matchups are just becoming so advanced in baseball now, where you can line up, okay, this hitter does well against pitchers who spin sliders really hard, and he's better than average against those guys. Or this guy has a hard time against changeups from lefties. Whatever it is, you can match up really, really specifically and with a pretty high degree of confidence. So that's the kind of matchups that you see. And of course, Montoyo incorporates that. He incorporates what he sees at field level in a given game and what his coaches are telling him, what his players are telling him. So we're seeing that balance in action. I also thought it was interesting to see him bunt. The Blue Jays up 3-0, and a runner on second base. Richard Urania is at the plate and nobody yet. So he wants to add to the lead and he calls for the bunt. And to me, it's interesting because, all right, like I think you can make a case either way on that one. Number 9 hitter. It's not like you have Bryce Harper up there. It's not like you have Vlad Jr. up there. It's Richard Urania. So bunting, I think, defensible, but that's a departure from what we had seen from John Gibbons, because Gibby last year called for the bunt 5 times. And I actually don't even think that...
Is that it?
It was a major league record.
What?
The fewest sacrifice bunts in major league history were the 2018 Blue Jays.
Was that in your story? How did I not see that? I guess I glossed over it.
It was a record.
So, that's crazy.
And I honestly don't even think that Gibby called for all 5 of those. I think some of those, the players were like, all right, we're going to put them down. Probably a couple were pitchers. A couple were the players on their own. And maybe Gibby called for one. I mean, I remember him joking last year that they have a bunt sign, but no one even knows what it is.
It's a great line.
Yeah, it's such a great line. But it's true. He's like, yeah, we got the sign. No one even knows what it is. And now here we are in the first series of the season, and Montoyo is saying, I like to bunt. We're going to bunt at times.
You know, I don't love bunting, but I was okay with that decision, right? It was, Galvis hit the double, and then, Urania put it down. Look, if Urania bunts maybe for a hit first, right? Like, if he bunted, and I think this actually is what happened. If he bunts over to the right side and tries to get hit out of it, and you still get the runner up, great. And then after you have failed at that, then okay, just lay down the typical sacrifice bunt, like, and bunt into the out that they are, you know, trying to get. I was okay with it.
Yeah, I don't think it's the worst move with a nine hitter, yeah. And it's Urania. Anyone else, like even if it's Gurriel, if it's Jansen, if it's Teoscar, I don't think you bunt there.
It's a bit of a different lineup too, right? Like the Blue Jays had a bunch of players in previous years that aren't going to bunt, like Morales, Bautista, Encarnacion,
right.
Martin, Tulowitzki, Donaldson. Like I could probably list nine players who were regulars for the Blue Jays and just were not going to bunt. Like even like Justin Smoke would fit into that, although Justin Smoke has been working on his bunting for different reasons, right? Like when the Minnesota Twins or Tampa Bay Rays or whoever comes in, take a look. If Justin Smoke gets a four-man outfield while he's hitting left-handed, do not be surprised to see him put down a bunt on the left side and try to take that free hit just to discourage teams from continuing to do that against him.
Yeah, which is a great idea. So that's the kind of, if you're ever bunting for a hit, that's awesome. And a little hint that Montoyo is more open to bunting than his predecessor.
Yes, Charlie Montoyo heading off-road with trail control like he's driving an all-new 2019 Ford Ranger. Do you like that one? So the other thing, the other interesting thing that we had was the pinch hit decision on Sunday. And you heard it off the top, Rowdy Tellez, it's this amazing home run. Rowdy Tellez, pretty strong dude, I'd say, on a changeup below the zone that he looked like he almost even kind of got fooled on and like maybe got 1.5 hands on the bat when he actually hit this thing and it goes out to right center. Strong lad, that Rowdy Tellez. But the decision to pinch hit Rowdy Tellez for Luke Maley in that spot, when Luke Maley and Dane Jansen are both in the lineup, Dane Jansen's your DH, so you are now sacrificing your designated hitter. You're going to have to play with a pitcher spot in your batting order going forward. Move obviously paid off. You cannot argue with the result. What did you think of the process?
Love it. I think that it's an aggressive move in a sense because, yes, you do expose yourself to losing your DH, and no manager wants to do that. You also, at that point, you don't have a backup catcher on the bench anymore because Maley's out of the game. So who's your emergency catcher? That question comes up in case something were to happen to Jansen. It exposes you a little bit, but I think you have to take that kind of Hail Mary attempt. And if you're down three, you are not going to get that many chances with runners on base. You have maybe one in the next inning. You have one right now. So take advantage of it. See if you can have someone hit one over the wall. Tellez did it, but I think that's best result, and I really like the process.
Yeah, any big like decision like that is going to carry some risk. Yeah. And the risk in that scenario was that the game goes like 12, 13, 14 innings, and you've kind of blown through your bullpen, and you only have one guy on the bench. Like, there is a point there when Thomas Pannone was in that game where the only reliever left was Daniel Hudson, who was unavailable that day. I'm sure like he would have gone out and pitched, but the Blue Jays really wanted to stay away from him, and the only player on the bench was Billy McKinney. After him, you were looking at like Marcus Stroman having to play an infield spot.
Which he would have loved.
Right? Or having to take a plate appearance. Or, you know, you're looking at maybe like if you needed another pitcher, it would have had to be probably Sean Reed Foley, who was supposed to start on Monday, right? But they probably would have gone to him. His day to throw was Sunday anyway. If they just needed an arm, if it was like the 16th, 17th inning. But look, that's the risk that you take.
And Reed Foley wouldn't have even been activated yet, right?
Oh yeah, he wasn't. That's
so it
right.
It really was all.
He
on
was
Pannone.
Just around. Yeah. That was a weird situation. Yeah, because like Reed Foley was just like hanging out, but he wasn't supposed to be hanging out.
Much like Anthony Alford. At least Reed Foley, we think, is going to get into a game.
Poor Anthony Alford watching like opening day from his Rogers Center hotel room.
Yeah, watching on MLB TV or in the hotel room. That's not what you want to be doing.
I hope he got one of the rooms with the windows that looks out at the outfield that he was supposed to be playing in.
That's rough. That's rough. Hopefully he'll get up here soon and get his chance because that's a close call.
So yeah, lots of like interesting in-game decision making for Charlie Montoyo that I'm interested to monitor going forward. That's why I was telling someone this morning about those first four games, like they were interesting, and that's all you can really hope for from the Toronto Blue Jays this year is that they're going to be interesting. And I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff going on
for sure. I mean, close games, the pitching was way better than we thought, and the offense wasn't really there, but I was very captivated this weekend by the games.
I think technically hitters are supposed to be ahead of pitchers to start the year. The pitchers were ahead of the hitters in this series.
That's for sure.
I don't know what that says about the quality of these lineups, but take it for what you will. Small culture things that Charlie Montoyo is doing. Like we've obviously discussed the video games, but you've also got the starting staff that is now going out to the bullpen with that night's or that day's starting pitcher to watch them throw their bullpen and kind of like do things as as a unit. I kind of mentioned earlier, you got a lot more players standing in front of the dugout for the national anthem, which is like, that's like the sort of thing that really pisses off like old baseball people. I'm not that upset by it. Like if a guy misses the national anthem because he's like getting his swings in or he's getting his stretches in or he's actually preparing for the game, like I'm fine with that. If he's missing it to play video games, like, yeah, okay. But if he's missing it to like actually prepare himself to play better in the game, like, who cares? But that is something that seems like has been a bit of a point of emphasis. So what do you think of these little kind of culture tweaks?
It's interesting to me more than anything. I don't think it's hard to say from the outside whether they're good or bad. I find it interesting, and especially where we're situated now with a press box in left field. Yeah. So we're right over the bullpen. So we see these guys walking out. We see them walking back to the dugout. We see the warm-up and the preparation. I like observing it. I find it interesting. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, good for them, because I don't know, maybe it's a waste of time. Maybe those guys should be on the training table.
Yeah.
But there's probably something to be gained from having that shared bond and feeling as though they're on the same team. That's great. Maybe they learn something from it. But from where I sit, I have a hard time saying good or bad, but it's interesting.
I think it's probably cool for a guy like Trent Thornton, who's making his MLB debut, to then like, or maybe, I don't know, now that I think about it, like maybe it would make him a little bit nervous. But like, I think it would either be cool that he has like these major league vets, like Matt Shoemaker and like Marcus Stroman, like there in his bullpen with him. But then also it could almost be like, it could almost heighten the tension a little bit. I don't know.
Like right there breathing down your neck.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't want to do something wrong, or they're you know, going to criticize my bullpen routine or whatever weird stuff that I do. Right? Like, I don't know, but it is kind of like, it is a cool thing. We'll see what happens in July when the Blue Jays rotation is like, you know, Marcus Stroman, Matt Shoemaker, TBD.
An opener.
Opener bullpen day.
Yep.
Right? Like, I don't know how they're going to carry this thing forward. Another like very, very small thing that doesn't matter at all, but that I thought is cool. Charlie Montoyo is like kind of making his office his own. And like John Gibbons, I don't think ever had a personal item in his office other than like his cowboy boots. And Charlie Montoyo's got like pictures of his kids and his family. And he's got like some art on the wall. He's got his bongo drums, like two different sets of them. And he was showing me yesterday, he's trying to get his Bluetooth speakers all situated.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So for his, because after games, like he listens to salsa music and plays the bongos, right? But he wants to get like the perfect kind of, you know, sound action or what. I don't know. I'm not an audiophile. I don't know. But it is kind of cool that he's kind of made that office his own a little bit.
Even as a computer on his desk.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, a little laptop. Yeah.
I think Gibby had one.
I'm sure he had a computer.
I don't know if it had ever been opened.
Yeah, I don't think he was necessarily going on Baseball Savant and looking through the leaderboards. I'm not saying Montoyo is, but I did notice a computer on his desk.
The 2-2 pitch, check swing by Castellanos, called for going around, and a strikeout for Trent Thornton. His first in the big leagues.
That was awesome. I mean, it was pretty much everything I'd dreamed of ever since I was 4 years old. And, you know, I was able to go out there and kind of show why I belong here. And you know, having my family there to witness that was really special.
Swing and a miss on a fastball. Thornton strikes out Candelario for his fifth strikeout through the first three innings in his major league debut.
You know, once I step on the mound, I'm, you know, focused on one thing and one thing only, and that's get guys out.
3-2 pitch from Thornton. Swing and a miss. Strikeout number 8 for Trent Thornton, and a new Blue Jays record for the most strikeouts in a major league debut. Have a day, Trent Thornton.
Before the game, I was, you know, pretty relaxed, but, you know, amped up at the same time. And after I threw that first pitch, it kind of just went, like, took a deep breath and kind of went from there.
So I just pulled up Baseball Savant here, and I don't know, maybe this is just on my computer, but the number one trending player on Baseball Savant, maybe you can confirm this for me, Trent Thornton on my browser.
Ahead of Yandy Diaz, ahead of Corbin Burns, he's there, number one.
That's what I have as well. So it's, that is the guy that people are interested in today. The Baseball Savant regulars are interested in Trent Thornton for good reason. Dude was nasty on Sunday. Like, good fastball, spotting it where he wanted to. amazing curveball, like really broke that thing off. And he's a guy who, like, shocker, the Houston Astros guy has amazing spin rates, but he's a guy who, you know, has elite spin rates on his curveball. And you can see with some of those that, like, he throws it and it looks like it's going one place and it bites in a really hard way in another direction. I mean, it's hard to imagine his MLB debut going much better than it did.
Exactly. 8 strikeouts in the debut, a franchise record for a pitcher making his debut. And a caveat, as we talk about pitchers for the Blue Jays in the opening series, Detroit Tigers lineup is not that formidable, but he really did all you could ask for, and it's a great way for him to start. I think that that's super encouraging for the Blue Jays, and for a guy that they got in the Aledmys Diaz trade last year, you're not necessarily projecting Trent Thornton as a front-of-the-rotation guy, but if he becomes the Blue Jays version of a Brad Peacock or something like that,
yeah,
that's amazing. Maybe he shuttles between the bullpen and the rotation. On this team, the opportunity is certainly there in the rotation, and he seized it in his major league debut.
Yeah, in that Tigers lineup, there's like two guys you're worried about, Castellanos and Miggy.
That's about it.
Is there really anyone else that you're concerned about as a pitcher?
Ivor Candelario getting the advanced scouting report treatment.
Nico Goodrum, yeah. Matt Shoemaker also looked really strong, I thought, in his outing. I mean, like, he's a finesse guy, right? So he's going to like work in and out and like up and down all over the zone, mixing and matching with like, you know, speeds and locations. And, you know, that type of thing can get hit hard at times. And I would expect that it will get hit hard at certain times this season. But then you could also have outings like he had where he went 7 scoreless, allowed only 2 hits, struck out 7.
Great outing. And you wrote about it at sportsnet.ca. It had been 2 years, right, since he had pitched 7 innings.
The last time he went 7 innings, the next day he woke up with the nerve issue in his forearm that then just like completely kiboshed the next like year and a half, 2 years of his life.
Yeah. So for him to go out there, feel physically strong, have that kind of result, he was really happy afterwards. I mean, you could see he was getting a little bit emotional, actually.
Big time.
As far as the reaction just to going out there and getting those kind of results, 7 shutout innings, really great sign for the Jays. And Shoemaker, easy to forget here, he's someone who they can keep in 2020 if they want to.
Right. I was talking to him in the clubhouse afterwards. You could kind of see how happy guys were for him, right? And guys kept coming over to like congratulate him and tell him how well he did. Like, you could tell he's a guy that people are really pulling for in that clubhouse. Good to see that. And then the last note on the pitching, good to see Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez just looking like Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez.
Yeah, they're friends again too, apparently. But yeah, there's no question. It's
depends who you ask.
But yeah. Right. But they're definitely both pitching well. That was a great sign for the Blue Jays to see both of those guys go out and shut down the Tigers. 0 earned runs allowed for the starting rotation to this point. I mean, that's a great sign for the Blue Jays overall. And Stroman and Sanchez are going to be the most closely watched duo of that entire group. I mean, Stroman's the guy who has that 200 inning potential. Sanchez, of course, has potential in his own right. I thought his curve looked really good in his first start. And to go up to 97, okay. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, with Stroman, like, maybe the command wasn't quite where you want it to be, but it's still a really good outing. And Sanchez, man, the curveball, like, that's spot on. Like, that curveball looked really, really good. And this time last year, like, he just couldn't throw that pitch due to what he was pitching through with his hand and with his fingers. So to see him being able to snap that thing off and throw it consistently, because, again, you kind of made the point to me out during his start, like, if he doesn't have the curveball, he's now going out there with a fastball and a changeup, which is his third best pitch, and you're just naked on the mound.
Exactly. And we saw last year for the early part of the season, he would throw his curve 7-8 times a game.
Yeah,
that's just not enough. If you're using it once an inning, then it's not really on batters' minds in the same way. But he threw it, I think, 16 times, got some swings and misses with it. Some guys connected. Miguel Cabrera hit one something like 100 miles an hour up the middle for a base hit, but that's what Miguel Cabrera is going to do. And to at least have the comfort in that pitch is big for Sanchez.
Yeah, that was a mistake curveball that like sat up in the zone. Like, if this was like Miguel Cabrera 3 years ago, that ball ends up like in a hotel room.
Yeah.
You know?
In Anthony Alford's suite.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I got a ball. Sweet.
A nice souvenir.
At least I got something for coming to Rogers Center. But yeah, I think that was just really encouraging to see those guys pitching the way they are. Also encouraging seeing Elvis Luciano make his big league debut. And it wasn't like in a spot where you would try to say, oh, we have like a 10-run lead or something, or we're down by a ton. Like, it wasn't the highest of leverage, but it wasn't super low leverage either. And I was talking to somebody from the Jays front office, like just happened to bump into them right after this happened. I was like, what did you think about that spot for Luciano? You know, he comes in to face Castellanos. So there's, you know, three runs in, he's got two runners on. This guy just said, yeah, I love it. Look, there's no, and I kind of love it too. Like, there's no hiding in this division.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to engineer like this, these scenarios all year long where the guy never faces leverage. Like, you can't just have a 24-man roster. He's going to have to face good hitters. He's going to have to pitch at Yankee Stadium and at Fenway Park. So why not test him early? Like, why not get him used to the fact that we're not going to be able to hide you from good hitters at this level?
Did you get a sense stuff-wise of Luciano, what he was bringing?
Looked good. Like, he saw kind of like the mid-90s fastball. Like, he's got a, you know, good changeup. Like, I wonder if that's like the thing that the Blue Jays are most intrigued by. Like, to see a guy that young who has a good changeup, it's pretty rare.
In spring training, Charlie Montoyo said that was his favorite off-speed pitch from Luciano.
That's probably one of the things I'm like most interested to kind of track going through this year. Also kind of interesting to note that Elvis Luciano, born February 15th, 2000, first MLB player ever born in the 2000s, got to face one Miguel Cabrera in his outing, a guy who made his major league debut June 20th, 2003.
Man.
When Elvis Luciano was 3 years old.
That's crazy, eh? And a guy that he grew up, I think he said afterwards, his favorite player growing up. I mean, certainly a legend when it comes to the last 15 years of Major League Baseball. He's arguably, you know, one of the best hitters along with Trout, along with Pujols. Miguel Cabrera is in that discussion.
They're coming for you, Miggy. The kids are coming. Game's catching up to you. A couple offensive players of note. Let's start with Kevin Pillar, who is 1-for-16 to start the year. No bueno. Not what you want. I did think that on Sunday he got robbed a couple times. I did think that he hit a few balls hard and there was some nice defensive plays made on him. But, you know, what's not encouraging is that he is swinging early and often in his plate appearances. Not encouraging because I took the over on the OBP over-under, but also just not encouraging because, you know, you'd like to see him being a bit more patient and selective. It's only four games. Like, it wouldn't be out of the question for him in the Baltimore Orioles series to hit, like, five doubles and just turn things around completely.
I think if you're any Blue Jays hitter and you see the Orioles coming to town, you're like, this is the time. I've got to pad my stats. This is it. Against that pitching staff, I mean, we could see some lopsided scores after seeing a really well-pitched Blue Jays-Tigers series.
Just pulling up the old StatCast from Sunday's game. The second hardest hit ball in the game, Kevin Pillar ground out. 112 miles per hour. He also had on his single 104 miles an hour. So he's hitting the ball hard. You know, I thought he's had some bad luck so far. So we'll see how that plays out. The hardest hit ball in Sunday's game, Brandon Drury. Single off Shane Green, 112 and a half. Brandon Drury has looked great at the plate. Love the way he's swinging the bat, but has looked perhaps even better at third base, where it's like kind of been a bit of a revelation. And like you said, we're watching from now, like down the left field line. So we have this great view of everything that he's doing. He's a good third baseman.
Yeah. I think he's definitely an above average defender at third. And you look at just the kind of positioning that he's had so far, he's playing way off the line. Charlie Montoyo doing that by design. Drury's comfortable with it. And he's getting to more balls. I mean, it might not be a diving catch in the 5-6 hole that is on highlight reels, but he is getting to balls that would often be hits. And that's saving the Blue Jays runs. It's helping the pitchers keep runs off the board. And Drury looks really comfortable. We see him making those throws. His timing is really good. He has a good feel for how, whether he has to rush a throw, whether he has enough time. I really like what I've seen defensively from him. And it's only four games, but still, he's had a lot of chances over there and he's handled them really well.
Yeah, he's looked phenomenal. And he made a play on a ball that went foul at one point, and I forget which day it was, they all blend together, but like, it was so smooth and fluid and natural. It was like almost one of those you wish it had gone fair, because it would have been a highlight reel thing, like where he just made a really fluid grab and then transition and threw a seed to first on the run just beautifully. Like, I think this is what people saw in Brandon Drury, right? And he had so many struggles with injuries and migraines, vision issues, like all kinds of stuff going on, and, you know, didn't have a clear role with the Yankees. But like, this is why a lot of teams in baseball really like Brandon Drury. Like, this is why the Blue Jays, like, you know, just had trade discussions about Brandon Drury, like in the time after they acquired him, before the trade deadline. So a very brief window. Other teams called them about Brandon Drury. This is what teams see.
You know, who knows if he can convert this into the overall package that we see the potential for, but that's what's going to happen in this 2019 season is guys like McKinney, Drury, Teoscar, Lourdes, they get their shot and some of them will prove that they can handle it and that they deserve regular playing time. And some of them will prove that they don't deserve it and that they're more of a bench player or they should be non-tendered or whatever the case. But it's interesting on this team to have guys who have earned the shot. They're ready for the major leagues to at least test themselves. And we'll see how many of these guys end up deserving those regular spots going forward.
Last guy I want to point out, it's really a shout out. Joe Biagini looks stellar. Like I said, four games. It's April 1st. All the caveats. Yada, yada, yada. Everything we've said on this podcast, right? Like caveats. But what do you don't want a podcast? We got to talk about it. You want to listen to a podcast or not? Dude's got seven strikeouts and three and a third. Like he's walked only one, no hits allowed. Tons of swing and miss. Like we're seeing like 94 mile an hour fastballs. We're seeing good cutters, good curveballs. We're seeing less of the like between pitches, deep breathing and gathering himself and tugging at his jersey and making a million adjustments and taking a long time and kind of laboring. We're seeing him like, you know, tighten up his pace coming out of spring training when, you know, we kind of asked Charlie Montoya, like, hey, who are your leverage relievers going to be? Like your bullpen blew up. Like, who are you going to go to? And he was like, Joe Biagini is going to be a guy. I think we all kind of scratched our heads. We're like, Joe Biagini? But this is why. He looks great.
He does. And again, it's just a week, but it's amazing how much changes in a week. I think that when Montoya said that on Wednesday before the season, I'm thinking, wow, that's really telling you about the state of the Blue Jays bullpen.
Yeah.
You know, that Biagini is the guy in leverage, but he has done just a great job on big spots. He has produced lots of strikeouts and that's, he deserves credit for that. It's crazy, but I think we're a Ken Giles forearm strain away from Joe Biagini, Blue Jays closer.
You're right.
That's where we're at. And from what we've seen, Biagini has done a great job so far in those first few games. So full credit to him.
No, you're so right. Not even that. Ken Giles pitches 3 out of 4.
Right.
And he just isn't available. It has to be Biagini.
It has to be.
Daniel Hudson?
No.
I don't know who else it's going to be.
It's not Sam Gavilio.
It's not Luciano. It's not Pannone.
No.
It's not Meza. Maybe Meza if it's like, you know, 2 out of 3-year lefties.
Right.
Maybe.
But most likely, it's
Joe Biagini.
It's Biagini.
Joe Biagini's your closer.
He'll be getting some saves.
That was the inefficiency. That was the thing that the Jays needed. Joe Biagini just had to throw him into the highest leverage possible and he would excel.
Or once Giles was traded, Biagini, closer.
They screwed him around with this, oh, you're starting, oh, you're multi-inning reliever. It's like, no, this guy just needs like extreme pressure and stress in order to perform at his best.
He's doing great.
We figured it out. We solved the Toronto Blue Jays. So 4 games in, 2-2. That's what you have. Ben and I are going to go down and watch the Baltimore Orioles this week. A team somehow worse than the team that we were watching on the weekend.
Way worse.
I love that MLB.com headline that you pointed out to me the other day when Baltimore beat New York and it was Orioles stun Yankees. It's just a regular season win. Stunning that they beat a good team.
It kind of is stunning. They're 2-1. Watch out for the Orioles.
Dwight Smith Jr. hit second for the Baltimore Orioles on opening day. Amazing. So we're going to go see them. I'll be in Cleveland later this week. And then the Blue Jays go on to Boston to play this weird like 2-game series with off days in the middle and on either side next week. But you'll probably hear from us sometime around then when the Blue Jays are in Boston. Thanks as always to our producer, Amal Delich. Get him on Twitter at AmanDelic. You know Ben Nicholson-Smith. My name's Arden Zwelling. Talk to you next week on At The Letters.
Pull up in motor cash. I got a show today. It's all I'm trying to do. Hustle and motivate. Choppers a throwaway. Hustle the overweight. That's why they follow me, huh? They think I know the way. Cause I took control of things. Ballin' the solo way. And if you pattern my trend, I make you my protege. Crossing that soldier race. I just don't know them days. Take you in back of the buildings. Make you expose your rage. Take you across the tracks. Make you explode the face. Now you official now. But you got a soul to save. I just been cooking that note. I'm about to drop in the fuel. Think if I call it the great, the people gon' call it the truth. I ain't really trip on the credit. I just paid all of my dues. I just respected the game.
guys got a lot more to prove. Remember I came in fresh out the county with nothing.
Is it one or another? No. When I got all you, but I don't do nothing, shit or nothing. No, no, no.